foggy night on Old Cape Cod.
A perfect night
for a mystery. Tonight, Cape Cod Radio Mystery Theater presents an unrelenting tale of suspense in a mystery thriller entitled Playback. Most of us, when we think of Cape Cod, think of picturesque landscapes and of quaint villages. Of sun and sand and sea and sky, a haven for relaxation. Well, this image, carefully built up and maintained by the local Chamber of Commerce, is about to undergo a sudden and radical transformation. A profound change is going to take place that will be as difficult to erase as if an oil barge had sunk offshore, releasing thousands of gallons of unctuous petroleum to spread across the beautiful white sand beaches. Only this time, the residue will be something less visible, something that is felt but not seen. A certain feeling of insecurity, like the kind you would expect to feel late at night walking through a public park in any one of the major metropolises. But somehow would never expect to encounter in such an idyllic setting as the Cape. They say that somewhere in the United States, once every 23 minutes, someone is murdered. Listen, can you hear one happening now?
When compassion dies, then is the monster born. Testing, 1, 2, 3, 4. Testing, 1, 2. There now, that's just right. The level indicator is just touching into the red. Now, before we get started, I'd better set this up for you. After all, I want you to understand how clever I was. The first thing I did, I went out and purchased a pair of white cotton slacks and a white shirt. I brought them home and dyed them sort of a muddly brown color. I already owned a pair of black leather shoes and a belt. And then to top it off, I found an embroidered patch that said delivery, which I sewed onto the flap over my shirt pocket. When I put everything on and checked myself out in the mirror, well, I thought I looked really realistic. Enough to fool anyone, I thought. Anyway, I figured no one was going to look that close. After all, someone comes to your door to deliver a package, you're much more interested in what's in the package than who's delivering it. Isn't that right? I mean, it's only human nature. I had already scouted the location, a nice residential area, but one with plenty of trees where the houses were not so close together that it was going to cause me any problems. The package was all set to go. I had it done up with wrapping paper and twine. I put a few "Handle with Care" stickers right on it, and I figured that would make it irresistibly tantalizing. I even took a clipboard with me with a sheet of paper I was going to make her sign when I handed it over. I filled in a few names up above to make it look like I'd been making deliveries all morning. I picked the morning to do it. Oh, well, practically any time's good for me. But mornings are best, I think, as far as people not being too much on their guard. The husband has left for work. The kids are off to school. I find you can get away with a lot of things if you do them early in the day. things that most people would be a lot more suspicious of if it was happening in the nighttime. Don't you agree? Well, now, I think we ought to begin. Now, let me just switch this on and get it running.
Testing. One,
that's me. Two. I testing always say one, that. Two, I don't know why. I guess everybody does. I'm sitting in my car with my engine running. Now we're on our way. I should tell you that the recorder is hidden under my clothes. A wire runs around the inside of my shirt to the microphone that's up front. I've just pulled into the drive. I just can't tell you what this felt like. I knew I was going to go through with it. I knew it the minute I turned into that drive. There. You see? I turned off the engine. That's how confident I was. Oh, I was nervous. Of course I was. But another part of me was calm. Completely calm. Because I knew positively that I wasn't going to fail. I'm going up to the front door. I'm ringing the bell. There. It takes her quite a long time to answer it. I think she was vacuuming in another part of the house. Wait, now wait a minute. Yes. Wait. You have to listen to this part carefully. I rehearsed this. I practiced it. I knew exactly what I was going to say, no matter what she came back with. Okay, now wait. I just have to back up a little bit here. Now, there's the door. Here she comes now. Now, just listen to this.
Yes?
Good morning, ma'am. A special delivery package for Mrs. Lynette O'Donnell.
I'm Mrs. O'Donnell. What is it? Oh, are those the bulbs I ordered?
I have no idea, ma'am, but there's a COD charge of $9.50.
COD? But they've never sent them COD before. Are you sure they're my bulbs?
Ma'am, I don't open them. I just deliver them. It's up to you if you don't want to accept the package.
I can't think of what else it could be. I just don't recall ordering anything else.
Well, ma'am, all I can tell you is I know from my experience quite often people will place an order for something and then completely forget they've done it. 2 or 3 months later, when it finally arrives, they can't imagine what it could be. Until after they open it, that is. However, if you don't want to accept the
package... No, I'll take it. Just a minute. I'll get my purse.
As soon as she steps out of sight, I put down the package. There, I'm opening the screen door and slipping inside. There's a guest bathroom that's right off the entryway, and I duck in there. She's coming back there.
No, I just can't for the life of me think of what it could be that I... Now, where did he go? But his package is here.
It was all so ridiculously simple. So much easier than I expected it would be. She went out quickly. Well, she struggled, but it was no use. I was much too strong for her. And then, all of a sudden, she went limp. I mean, literally in 1 second, she was fighting for her life. And the next thing I know, she's hanging in my arms like a rag doll. I let her slide to the floor. For a while, I just stood there. Eyes closed, feeling the blood pulsating through my temples and watching those funny little patterns float across the back of my eyelids like when you squeeze your eyes together so tightly you can see checkerboards. Afterwards, when I got home, came the sense of elation, of having accomplished what I set out to do. And no one had been able to stop me. Not even you. And now there is that one question that has to be running through your minds. That one nagging question that must be occurring to you right now as you listen to this. Can he do it again? That's what you're asking yourself. Can he do it again? Will he do it again?
All right, shut it off. We've heard enough.
Such an intriguing question, don't you think? Well, goodbye for now.
All right, gentlemen. You've all heard the tape. You know what we're up against. Obviously, this is no longer simply a murder case. We are dealing with the worst type of killer, the psychopath who selects his victims from perfect strangers. And obviously, from what we have just heard, he has every intention of pulling this stunt again. Catching this man before he kills again has got to be our number one priority. Therefore, I am today setting up a special task force, and for reasons I'm sure you will all understand, I am appointing Lieutenant Warrington here to run it. Every person in this department shall understand that their primary duty is to assist in this investigation any way they can. The main thing we have got to do is catch this man and do it quickly. All right, Lieutenant, why don't you take over?
To review briefly, before this tape was mailed to us, we had no clear idea of how or why this murder was committed. An examination of the body and the murder scene turned up zero evidence and no leads. None of the neighbors saw or heard anything. Of course, now that we have this tape, we know exactly how it was done. More importantly, we know the killer's voice. We know what he sounds like.
That accent he was using sounded pretty phony to me.
It may have been, but without the use of electronics, a person can only go so far in disguising his voice. Clearly, we have to warn the public, and especially warn women to be wary of strangers. We may be asking for the public's help in identifying this voice. We're not sure about this yet. There are a number of pros and cons to consider. We will also be calling in the FBI, the state police, and anyone else who can possibly help out on this one. In the meantime, I want us to pursue every possible lead. Let's hit the clothing stores. Find out if anyone remembers a man buying a pair of white cotton slacks and a shirt. Try the audio electronics stores. See if any salespeople remember a man buying a miniature tape recorder. Right now, we're looking for anything. Let's be careful. Let's be fast. And let's be efficient. Keep in mind that every hour that goes by without our finding this man is another hour ticking away in the life of the killer's next victim.
This is John Mansfield in the WPTX newsroom with a special news update. Police Lieutenant Peter Warrington, head of the Special Criminal Investigations Task Force set up in the wake of last Monday's brutal slaying of Lynette O'Donnell, is today appealing to anyone who can identify the voice in the following clip.
First thing I did, I went out and purchased a pair of white cotton slacks and a white shirt. I brought them home and dyed them sort of a muddly brown color. I already owned a pair of black leather shoes and a belt.
Anyone who believes they can identify this voice, or anyone who has any other information that may be useful to the police, is urgently requested to contact the Special Task Force. In the meantime, Lieutenant Warrington has reissued his warning to all citizens, especially women, to exercise extreme caution in dealing with any strangers who may approach them. In a related story, the Cape Cod Chamber of Commerce Association is advising all tourists and summer residents on the Cape.
Yes. Yes, I do. Yes, I realize the effect it's having on the tourist season. No, we are not going to change our statement. Nor tone it down. No, it's not a question of more manpower. It's a question of more leads. Yes, that's correct. We're expecting him today. A gentleman named Michael Hillman, a special agent. I understand he's head of one of the crime labs down there. No. And I won't know anything until I've had a chance to go over with him whatever it is he's come up with from studying the tape. They've had it for 5 days now. Just 1 second, Counselor. Is he here? Why are you shaking your head? He's not here. He is. Counselor, you can inform the selectmen that Mr. Hillman has just arrived. Yes, I will. Yes. No, I have no idea when we'll be finished. Yes, you can call me at home. All right. Goodbye, Counselor. You know who that was?
Oh,
the attorney from the selectman's office. He is suggesting that we clarify our public statement He wants us to publicly state that we have no reason to be certain that if the murderer repeats himself, he will necessarily do it on the Cape. That's what I like about those guys, always serving the highest public interest. Why were you shaking your head?
Special Agent Hillman is here.
All right, let's bring him in.
I think you'd better take a look at this first.
Take a look at what?
Down at the end of the hall. The one checking out notices on the bulletin board.
That's Michael Hillman?
It's Mikhail. We've been pronouncing it wrong.
You've got to be kidding.
No.
I wonder if she's so young. What is she, 23, 24?
I don't know. Looks to me like she just got out of college. What I want to know is how did someone like her get to be made head of a section?
I don't know. Maybe she had an uncle named J. Edgar Hoover. God, she is good looking, isn't she?
Mm-hmm.
Let's get her in here. I just hope she's as good at what she does as she is to look at.
Agent Hillman, how do you do? I'm Peter Warrington. Can I give you a hand with what you've got there?
No, thank you. I can manage.
We've been looking forward to your arrival. How was your flight?
A little bumpy. Not bad.
I understand you're head of one of the analysis sections in Washington.
That's right.
Pardon my observing, but you seem kind of young and, well, female for the job. I wasn't aware the Washington Bureau was that enlightened in their hiring practices.
They're not really. It happens I was born with a special ability.
Which is?
I have perfect pitch.
Oh.
I also have an extremely acute sense of hearing.
Is that right?
Yes, and since you were wondering, I'm 27, not 23, and my uncle was not J. Edgar Hoover.
I see. Tell me, in what form would you like your apology? Written?
Don't bother. I'm the one who should apologize. It was rude of me to listen in.
Whoa, it must have been rough growing up with an ability like that. They probably always knew what you were getting for Christmas.
Something like that. You know, I might ask you the same question. How did someone your age get to be put in charge of such an important case? Was your uncle the police commissioner?
Touché. Actually, it was more or less accidental. I was lucky enough to be involved in solving a couple of cases that attracted quite a bit of publicity. In a place as narrowly confined as the Cape, any amount of favorable publicity tends to exert quite an upwards pressure on one's career. Would you like some coffee before we get started?
No, thanks. I had plenty on the plane. I prepared a list of all the sounds I was able to identify off the tape. I also have a written analysis, but I thought it would be best if I played some of the sounds for you, which is why I lugged along all this equipment.
Do you need some help setting it up?
No, I'll have to do it myself. It will take me a few minutes.
Let me clear off my desk to give you some room.
Thanks. By the way, I want to thank you for letting me have the original to work from. It's always so much easier than working off a dub.
So, what's your assessment of what you were able to come up with?
I was able to identify quite a number of specific sounds, but nothing I'm afraid that will lead you directly to the murderer. Probably the most significant and concrete thing I can tell you is that the murderer's automobile has a General Motors engine, six-cylinder, with an automatic transmission. Beyond that, I can't say what model or year it is.
Too bad. If we could pinpoint something like that, it would really give us something to work with.
I tried, believe me. I worked on it quite a bit. Unfortunately, a lot of General Motors car engines sound alike.
What else did you come up with?
A refrigerator.
A refrigerator?
A Frigidaire, I think. Anyway, I'm pretty sure it's just a standard home appliance refrigerator.
That's interesting.
How so?
Well, most motel rooms don't have refrigerators. If we can rule out motels, that eliminates a whole lot of places he could be staying on the Cape. Assuming he is staying on the Cape, which may not be a very accurate guess. He could just as easily be living in Boston and have commuted down here to commit the murder. After all, the Boston Strangler did a fair amount of commuting. Then again, it could be an efficiency apartment. They've got refrigerators, don't they?
Small ones, usually. This one isn't small. It's got too big a motor.
All right. Then we'll assume he's not staying in a motel room. What do you need?
An outlet. Have you got one somewhere?
Behind my desk. Here, hand it to me.
You know, Lieutenant, there is something you have to keep in mind as we review this recording. and it's one of the problems I've faced in analyzing it.
What's that?
The fact that what we are dealing with is really two separate recordings. The first recording was made at the victim's home while the murder was taking place. Afterwards, the killer made a second recording, which was him playing back the murder tape while he overdubbed his own voice. In both cases, the microphones were picking up and recording all of the incidental background noises. The problem is, how do you tell which background sound belongs to which recording?
In other words, what you're saying is, the refrigerator sound you identified off the tape may have come from the murderer's apartment, but it also could have come from the murder scene itself?
Exactly.
Well, I see what you're saying, but in this case, I don't think so. I visited the house where the murder took place, and the kitchen is way around the corner from the front door. I don't think there's any way the sound from a refrigerator would have carried that far.
I hope this thing works now that I brought it all the way up here.
Is it old?
Not old, just delicate. Sometimes airplane rides are not the very best thing for sophisticated electronics. There. Seems to be working. Now, it'll just take another minute or two while I run a program.
You know, I never realized there'd be that much demand for this kind of forensic work.
Oh, you'd be surprised. In the first place, probably 99% of the police stations in the country record all of their incoming calls. I'm sure yours does.
Oh, yes.
So do fire departments. Most criminal confessions these days are either videotaped or tape recorded. Also, terrorists and kidnappers often use recordings to make ransom demands or to prove that the person they've kidnapped is still alive. Plus, every time the courts authorize another wiretap, the results invariably are hours and hours of recorded conversations. Our analysis section reviews literally hundreds of miles of tape recordings every year.
I didn't realize.
Sometimes we're asked to positively identify a voice. Sometimes to verify that a recording has not been tampered with, a la Richard Nixon and the White House tapes. And sometimes, as in this case, we're asked to pick out and identify extraneous background sounds. Of course, the most famous example of this were the gunshot sounds accidentally recorded during the Kennedy assassination. We're almost ready now. I don't know how much you know, Lieutenant, about how tape recordings are analyzed.
Practically nothing, I can assure you. I made a tape recording once when I was a kid. That's about it.
There's an old saying, the ear never stops listening. It's true, even while you're asleep. And the same might be said of a microphone. As long as it's switched on, it never stops listening. Every sound that is there, even extremely faint ones, are picked up and recorded. In fact, compared to some microphones, the human ear is not a very sensitive listening device. What makes the ear so good is that it happens to be connected to a very powerful computer called the brain. Now, however, that we're coming up with some pretty powerful computers of our own, we're able to pick apart and analyze sounds in ways that were never dreamed of before.
I see.
Generally, the first thing we do when we set out to analyze a recording is transpose it from analog to digital.
You've lost me already.
Okay. Most recordings are done in analog. That means that the sound impulses picked up by the microphone are relayed directly to the record head on the tape machine. However, in a digital recording, each tiny impulse of sound is first converted into a number, and it's the numbers that are stored on the magnetic tape. You follow me?
I think so.
This is useful for several reasons. First, once you've taken something and expressed it as a number or series of numbers, then you can manipulate it in a million myriad ways by just changing some of the numbers. And secondly, it's important because numbers happen to be the language of computers. We can instruct a computer to analyze a number and, by doing so, analyze the sound, and do it at a level of scrutiny that is way beyond the capabilities of the human ear. There. Now we're up and running. What would you like to hear first?
Why not the refrigerator? It's right near the beginning.
Well, let me check my reference sheet to see which sound file I put it in.
Well, wait a minute. Where's the tape?
No tape. It's all stored on floppy disk. Here it is.
I picked the morning to do it. Oh, well, practically any time's good for me. But mornings are best, I think, as far as people not being too much on their guard.
Did you hear it?
Barely.
All right. I'll play it back, only this time I'll sit on the voice, boost the background a bit, and change the EQ.
EQ?
Equalization. Now listen once more.
Oh, it the moment to do it. Oh, and for any time for me, but mornings are best unfocused by people not
being
too much on their guard.
Yes, I do. That's remarkable.
It's a little distorted, but it's definitely the sound of a refrigerator. Shall I go on?
Yes.
All right, now listen to this, and you'll have to listen carefully.
Oh, I was nervous. Of course I was. But another part of me was calm.
Here it comes.
Completely calm. Because I knew positively that I wasn't going to fail.
Did you hear it?
Two beeps. What was that, a wristwatch?
A Timex, I think. It's hard to say. There's so many different brands on the market. We can assume the murderer was wearing it, and it went off during the murder. Or later, when he was describing how he had done it. Shall I keep going?
Yes, keep going. I don't think we've got anything yet.
All right. I'm going to play you part of another sound file. Remember you said you didn't think it was a motel room?
Yes.
Here's another reason you're probably right. I'm going to modulate the frequency quite a bit so you can hear it more clearly.
Well, all I can tell you is, I know from my experience, quite often people will place an order for something and they completely forget they've done it. Two or 3 months later, when it finally arrives, I can't imagine what it could be.
Five chimes. 5 o'clock.
Most motel rooms do not have clocks like that that chime the hour.
So what does that tell us?
It tells us, I think, that while the murderer was narrating his account of the murder, a clock, this clock, went off in another room in another part of the house. Since we picked up the sound of a refrigerator, my guess is that he was sitting in his kitchen when he made the tape, and the clock was somewhere else, upstairs, in the living room or dining room. Of course, it's also possible that the chimes we hear came from a clock inside the victim's house, not the murderer's.
No, I don't think so. In the first place, I can't recall any clock like that anywhere in the murdered woman's house. Besides, I counted 5 chimes, and we know the murder took place shortly after 8:30 in the morning. No way a clock is going to be off by that much. Let's go on.
This next one was a toughie. I had to do quite a bit of sound enhancement to figure it out.
What's that?
It's similar to what you do when you take a section of a photograph and enlarge it. What you end up with is kind of grainy, but still it allows you to hear things you otherwise wouldn't hear. Listen now. You'll hear in the background a kind of roaring sound, like when you put your ear to a seashell.
All of a sudden, she went limp. I mean, literally in 1 second, she was fighting for her life, and the next thing I know, she's hanging in my arms like a rag doll.
That sounds like the ocean.
The slide to the floor.
What is that? The sound of faraway breakers borne on the wind?
I thought so, too, at first. Then I realized if it was the ocean, it should have been in the background the whole time. It wouldn't have just started up like that.
What is it, then? Just wind?
Here, I'll play it once more. And I'll try to isolate the sound a little better for you.
So
that's not the roar of the ocean. It's the rumble of a train.
Yes, exactly. And when you listen at the very end of the tape, just before he stopped recording, you can hear something else. Listen.
Goodbye for now.
Watch now. I'll boost the background.
That is a train, isn't it?
It is. Unfortunately, I don't think that gives us very much to work with.
You know, I wonder if that could be...
Could be what?
That would certainly tell us something if it was. In fact, it would tell us a lot. Wait a minute. That's it. Damn it, that's it. That tells us everything. We've got it all now.
What are you talking about?
Wait. We can figure this out. We can figure it out. But we need a schedule. If they had one, what did I do with it? It's on my desk. Help me look for it.
For what?
In the wastebasket. Check in the wastebasket. I might have thrown it away.
What is it?
A train schedule. Oh, wait. I could just call over there. I could call them up. Tell you what. You keep looking, and I'll look up the number.
What does it look like?
It's white and green, about this big. It has a picture of a train on the front.
Lieutenant, can you tell me what you're on to?
What I'm on to, Agent Sullivan, Mikel, is I think you just handed us our most important lead in this case. God, you are a wizard on that thing. Hello. Hello, this is Police Lieutenant Peter Warrington calling.
Is this it?
That's it. What? Oh, no. Sorry. Never mind. I'll call you back. Thank you. Goodbye.
Peter, can you tell me what this is all about?
I'll tell you. When you were flying up here today, when you were flying over the Cape, did you happen to look down and see the Cape Cod Canal?
Yes.
Did you notice a funny-looking bridge on the south end with two towers, sort of like a castle?
I remember seeing something that looked like it belonged on the set of The Wizard of Oz.
That's it. That's the railroad bridge. There's something we may not know about the Cape, Mikel. The entire East Coast may be riddled with train tracks, but on the Cape, there is only one set of tracks. They cross the canal, right there. There's a short leg that runs down to Falmouth, but the main line travels north along the canal, and then swings east when you get to Sandwich. Then it passes through East Sandwich, West Barnstable, and Barnstable Village, before it finally ends up in Hyannis. The tracks aren't used much anymore, an occasional freight train, except in summer, when there's a tourist train that makes daily sightseeing trips back and forth along the line.
And if that's the train we're hearing on the recording, then he's got to be living somewhere on the Cape.
Yes, yes, but we can narrow it down even more than that.
How?
Just look at what we know. We know what day it was. A Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. Because the murder took place on a Monday, and we didn't receive the tape until the following Thursday. We know what time it was. 5 o'clock. Because shortly before we hear the train whistle, we hear a clock in the background chime 5 times. And a little before that, we hear his wristwatch. One of those clocks may have been fast or slow, but the point is, it tells us the approximate time of day, and we know what train it was. At least I think we do. Anyway, putting it all together, we ought to be able to estimate the position of the train at that time of the afternoon. And knowing that, and since we can hear the train whistle in the background, we ought to be able to figure out approximately where this guy lives.
Yes, I suppose I see what you mean. Yes, it does make sense. Then the first question we have to answer is it really the same train?
We'll have to assume it is. That's all we can do.
Maybe not. Not if you can arrange to let me hear the actual tourist train whistle. If I can compare it to what's on the tape, well, there isn't much to work with. Maybe I can...
Let me ask you this. How far will the rumble of a train and the sound of a train whistle carry over land?
That depends. The low-frequency rumble of the tracks would carry through the ground farther than the higher-frequency sound of the whistle. Wind would be a definite factor, the lay of the land, whether there were any trees in the way. A lot of things.
But if you worked on it, if you spent a few days here before going back, you could help us narrow it down. I have no idea what your schedule is like, but we can certainly arrange to put you up for a few nights. I know it's asking a lot, Mikel, but can you do it?
You know, Peter, ever since I started in analyzing this tape, I must have listened to it at least 50 times. 50 times I've listened to it and concentrated on it, and so 50 times I've had to relive that woman's death. In my line of work, you get to listen to some pretty gruesome recordings. Racketeers calmly discussing how they're going to go out and murder someone. Kidnapped children tearfully begging to come home. It can be pretty devastating at times. But I tell you honestly that nothing has ever affected me like this. I will do absolutely anything I can that will help you catch this man. I only pray that we get to him before he gets to someone else.
Testing 1, 2, Hello again. You've been thinking about me, haven't you? Not only wondering who I am and where I am, but asking yourself, what sort of person could do this kind of thing? My mother always did say I was of a highly excitable nature. Looking back, I believe it was as early as age 7 when I first began to identify those strange impulses and desires. Things that, as I grew older, began to exert more and more of an influence upon my young mind. There's always a danger, don't you think, in becoming too familiar with one's own emotions? Learning to recognize them and pick them out in parts per billion until you come upon that one infinitesimal part of you that is just absolutely hideous. Oh, we all know him, that little man with the pointed beard and the high cheekbones who lives entombed in that stone-walled dungeon, who cackles and pleads and connives his way into convincing you to let him out. Just for a fraction, he says. Just for the tiniest space of a moment. And then he'll go right back because he only wants to see for a moment what it's like on the outside. And so you let him fool you. You allow him to delude you into thinking he'll keep his word. So you say to yourself, well, what harm is there? After all, I can always put him back. Besides, you're curious. You want to see for yourself what it's like. And so you unlock that door and let him out. And for a few seconds, nothing changes. Nothing happens. You're standing there, and he's standing there. And you're both looking at each other exactly as before. It's only as you gaze into his eyes and see the evil look on his face that you realize what a fool you've been. Then, what was once a curiosity becomes a compulsion. Soon the visits to the dark side of yourself become longer and more frequent. You discover it's not you but him who was given the orders, telling you when to take him out, letting you know when it's all right to put him back. You look at yourself in the mirror, and the image is totally different. And yet, to most people, you are still the same person they are used to seeing. They don't notice any change. They're either too dumb or too unobservant to see it. But you know. You know with absolute certainty how completely you have been emptied out and replaced by that other thing. Of course, that's one of the reasons you're having such difficulty finding me. I'm the kind of person about whom everyone will say, never in a million years would I have guessed it was him. Perhaps I shouldn't mention this, but I just can't resist telling you. Last week I was actually pulled over by the cops. Oh, I'm sorry I can't give you more details, except to say what an exquisite joke it was knowing that the police officer who stopped me had absolutely no idea who he was talking to. No inkling whatsoever. Well, perhaps we should get started. I don't want to take up too much of your time. I must say you certainly did not make it easy for me. All those warnings to the public to watch out for strangers. Beware of phony delivery men. It actually forced me to take a completely different approach. You know what puzzles me is why so many people go to so much trouble to put up heavy-duty locks on their front doors while they totally overlook the fact that there may be another, much more simple way to get here.
Testing. 1, 2,
Here I am doing it again. This time I'm hiding in the woods alongside her house. It's morning. She's just come out, locking the door behind her. She'll be heading into a car. A working girl on her way to work. As soon as the car is out of sight, I'll move in. I know she's gone for the day. I know she lives alone and won't be back until sometime after 5 when she gets off work. There are neighbors who live across the street and on the opposite side of the house, so I have to keep my angle of approach just right. The bulkhead door that leads to the cellar is a flimsy thing. That's what I can't understand about some people's ideas of securing their homes against intruders. Anyway, I'm pretty certain this isn't her house. I'm pretty certain she's just renting. I say that because... Oh, that's the cellar door. It gave way like nothing. I take a minute to repair the damage. There isn't much. Now I'm going down. And there, I'm shutting the door behind me. It's dark down below. Cobwebs. If there's anything I can't stand, it's the feeling of cobwebs. Oh, they just give me the creeps. But I like cellars. I always have. I love that dank, earthy smell. Moldy cinder blocks, drippings from the oil furnace. I spent a lot of time in cellars when I was a boy. In fact, my mother used to lock me down there. But there is one thing she never found out. I learned to like it. You know, people who have never done it before don't realize what a thrill it is to be inside someone's house when they have no idea you're there. She's away at her job, going through her normal workday, never dreaming for a moment that I'm upstairs in her house, going through her things, opening her drawers and pulling out stuff. I'm always careful to put things back so nothing will look out of place when she comes back. Here's a nice calico cat that greeted me the minute I came up from the cellar. Now, this is where I turned off the recorder. I had to. I didn't have enough tape to keep it running all day long. I didn't switch it back on until much later when I heard the sound of her car pulling into the driveway. She was late. It was well after 5, almost 6 when she drove in. I discovered why, not long after. Okay, now, let's start again. I should tell you, I'm back down in the cellar now, looking out through one of the basement window wells. I can only see her legs as she gets out of the car. She's taking something out of the trunk. Ah, that's why she's late. She went grocery shopping. She brings in a bag of groceries now, but there must be more because she left the trunk lid open. Listen, now you can hear the heels on the floor right above me. Now she's gone back for another. I slipped to the top of the stairs and opened the door just a crack. Stronger. If anything, it was making her weak. Once I got a firm grip, she wasn't much trouble. Not much trouble at all.
What kind of a maniac are we dealing with? Why is he doing this? Why is he sending us these tapes?
It's obvious. He's confident he won't be caught. Either that or he's hoping he will be, and this is a desperate plea.
Or a plea bargain. If you ask me, he knows exactly what he's doing. That business about being emptied out and replaced by that other thing. He's setting himself up for an insanity defense in case he gets...
On what possible grounds? This was deliberate, premeditated murder, for God's sake. How could he?
By going the multiple personality route. Claim he wasn't responsible for his actions because another personality was inhabiting his body.
No. The public would never stand for it. They'd never let him get away with it. When they get an earful of this stuff, they'll be ready to burn him at the stake.
My guess is it's a little of both. He thinks he can't be caught, and he's hoping he will be. It's obvious he's already destroyed himself. He's as much as said so. He's already dead inside. This is just his way of playing it out to the end.
Yeah, well, he's not dead enough for me, not by a long shot. All right, let's get moving and catch the son of a bitch.
This is John Mansfield in the WPPX newsroom with a special news bulletin. Police Lieutenant Peter Warrington, head of the Special Criminal Investigations Task Force, has just concluded a news conference where it was revealed that the murder of Doreen Beckman was definitely the work of the same killer who was responsible for the death of Lynette O'Donnell 10 days ago.
At this point, all I can tell you is that we have received another tape recording. It is similar to the last. And it is definitely the same person who was responsible for both murders. This time the murderer did not pose as a delivery man. He managed to gain access to Miss Beckman's home while she was away, and then surprised her when she returned.
How did he get in?
He broke in through an outside door leading down to the cellar.
Lieutenant, both Mrs. O'Donnell and Miss Beckman were women in their 20s and 30s. Can we assume this represents the profile of the type of person the killer is seeking?
You can speculate about that. I don't think we can afford to make that assumption based on what we know.
Are these murders being classified as sex crimes?
They are classified as homicides.
Does that mean...
I'm not going to comment any further.
Lieutenant,
over here.
Lieutenant, what results did you get from airing the clip of the first murder tape?
We had a number of people contact us who felt they could identify the voice they were hearing. We checked out every one of these leads. Unfortunately, none of them panned out.
Lieutenant, can you tell us how much help the FBI has been able to provide in your investigation?
We have been working closely with the FBI. I would say their assistance has been of tremendous value to us.
Can you elaborate?
I think we are making progress. That's about all I can say.
Does that mean you're closing in?
I would say we are making progress. I don't want to characterize it as any more than that. All right. Thank you, everyone.
Today's announcement follows a day and a half of intense speculation since the body of Miss Beckman was discovered in the kitchen of her home late last Friday night. Police have reissued their warning to all citizens to be extremely cautious in dealing with strangers. In a related story, the Cape Cod Chamber of Commerce Association is advising all tourists and summer residents on the Cape that special efforts are being made.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Peter Warrington. Will you connect me with your records division, please? Thank you. Hi, Sam. Peter Warrington. Yeah, I know. It's been a while. How you doing up there? They keeping you busy? Yeah, I know. It's a pretty grim situation. In fact, that's why I'm calling, Sam. I want to give you some more work to do. I would like you to track down the name and or license plate of every person pulled over in the state within the past 10 days. Yeah, everyone. It may have been a citation, a written warning, a verbal warning, or whatever. In fact, to tell the truth, Sam, we're not even sure it happened. This may be false information he's fed us to throw us off the track. He's smart enough for it, but it's obviously something we can't afford to ignore. No, in fact, don't concentrate on the Cape. We have reason to believe he's living down here, within a certain radius, and my guess is, if he really was pulled over, he wouldn't have told us about it unless it happened somewhere else, maybe Boston. Great, we'll run a cross-check on anything you come up with. When would you like me to get back to you? Okay, tell you what, I'm going out for some dinner right now. I'll call you when I get back. Say around midnight? And Sam, thanks for working late on this. If you had a chance to hear what's on these tapes, you'd know why I'm asking. I'll call you back. Thank you. I had another call today from the selectman's office. They're getting pressure from the local merchants. And they wanted to know what progress we were making. It's amazing what happens when a case like this comes up in a part of the country that depends so heavily on tourism. The local chamber of commerce turns into a chamber of horrors.
What answer did you give them?
I told them the same thing I said at the news conference. That we were working hard, that we were making headway, but as yet there were no breaks in the case. He asked me if I thought we were closing in. Why is it that everybody always wants to know that? I told him in cases like this, until the big break comes, it's never possible to know if you're closing in or going entirely in the wrong direction. Needless to say, he wasn't reassured.
So what do you think? Are we closing in?
Well, believe it or not, I do. I kind of feel it, don't you?
When did your friend say he'd get back to you?
I said I'd call him back after midnight, after we have dinner, and drop you back to get some rest.
I don't mind staying up.
Oh, there's no need to. And it's better you get some rest, so you'll be fresh in the morning. I'm thinking of featuring you at a press conference tomorrow.
To appease the selectmen?
And reassure the public. After all, you do represent the FBI.
And I suppose my being a woman doesn't have anything to do with it.
She sees through my every move. All right, so who says I can't behave like a press agent every once in a while? Besides, I thought you'd be willing.
Oh, I didn't say I wasn't willing. I'm sure it would be an excellent career move. After having lived in Washington for a while, I'm getting very good at spotting good career moves.
Yeah, right.
You know, Peter, there's something I can't figure out about you. I can tell that solving this case means a lot to you, and yet, except for the obvious reason, I can't figure out why. Clearly, you don't care very much about moving up the ladder. In Washington, that's practically all anybody thinks about.
It's not much different on the Cape. But since you asked, I'll tell you a story that up to now, I haven't told anybody else. You see, right from the start, I felt it was so ironic that I was involved in this case. You remember when you asked me how much experience I had with recordings? I mentioned that when I was a kid, I had once made a tape recording.
Yes.
I was in the eighth grade, so I must have been 13 or 14. My grandfather had come to live with us because he was old and no longer able to live alone and take care of himself. Years before he came to live with us, he had gone through a period when he had practiced to become a square dance caller. You know, the guy who sings Do-Si-Do and Swing Your Partner.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he made a tape recording of songs he had taken off of records. Only he wasn't very sophisticated about how he went about it. He made the recordings through the air by simply playing the records on the record player and placing a microphone in front of the speaker.
Uh-huh.
Needless to say, the sound quality wasn't very good. In fact, it was awful. Even in my ears, it was awful. When he came to live with us, he used to sit in his room and play this tape of his. It used to drive us all crazy, but he never seemed to get tired of it. Then once, when his birthday was rolling around, I got the grand idea that I would go down to the library, find the exact same recordings, and re-record the tape. Only this time, I would do a much better job. His birthday arrived. I brought the machine out and set it down in front of him. I switched it on. He listened for a while. And then he got up and went into his room without saying a word.
Why did he do that?
It took me a week to find out. You see, on the tape he had made for himself, there had been a mistake. An accidental error. During the recording of one of the songs, his wife had happened to come home from shopping. And she let the screen door slam behind her as she came in.
Oh, no.
So you see, that was the reason. That was why every day he would sit and listen to it and daydream. And when the part came up, when the screen door slammed, he would use that one sound to transport himself back to the days when his wife was still alive.
Oh, Peter, what a shame.
And he would imagine that his wife had just come home.
It wasn't your fault. It showed a lot of compassion.
Still, I'm the one who erased it. Which is the reason I think that solving this case means so much to me. It all seems connected, don't you think?
It's a sad story.
Yeah. So, anyway, when we catch this guy, where do you think we should put him? In the electric chair, into prison, or into analysis?
Right now, I'd settle for all three, in that order. Honestly, I don't much care what happens to him. Sometimes I try to feel some sympathy for the tortured, lonely person he has to be, but I can't do it. I can't feel any sympathy. For me, listening to these tapes has taken it all away, just completely erased it. Right now, all I can focus on is how dangerous he is. I just want to see him locked up. That's all I care about. I just want to see him put away.
It's women who are responsible. It's mothers who turn their boys into murderers. That's the way it happens, don't you see? Mothers do it. Let me ask you something. Do you remember as a child what it felt like to be held down when someone bigger than you was sitting on top and you're trying to get loose? And you're kicking, and you're screaming, but she won't get off! Pretty soon you have to stop struggling. There's so much weight on your chest, you can hardly breathe in a breath. And you think you're going to faint, or pass out as spots come up from in front of your eyes. And those little red and black checkerboards float into your field of vision. Oh, I know what you're thinking. You think I must be some kind of monster to do these things. You think I don't have a conscience. Well, I have one. Sometimes I am fairly well suffocated by the boa constrictor of my own conscience. Do you suppose for 1 minute that I haven't tried to turn this evil inwards? But I told you before, I am held in the grips of another kind of serpent, much stronger than I, whose invisible coils, like the coils of an addiction, wrap around so tightly and only allow you the illusion of freedom so long as you do not struggle against. And so I become the unwitting accomplice to my own actions, the frightened rabbit in the python grip. You know, the more I think about it, the more I can convince myself that this was all a coincidence, that it wasn't a trap at all. Which just goes to show that no matter how well you plan these things, there is always the unexpected that can turn up. This time I had to look around quite a while until I found what I was looking for. Finally, I settled on that cute little resort motel in West Yarmouth, the one with the row of identical bungalows lined up like so many houses in a Monopoly game.
Oh, you know the one I mean. Those cheery little colleges with the red shutters and the geraniums growing in the window box. Which is what makes the inside such a big disappointment. Oh, it's clean enough, all right, but it's just like every other motel room in the country. The bathroom on your left as you come in, the closet alcove on your right with a rack of irremovable hangers for your clothes, and straight ahead, the two beds with identical bedspreads and the telephone nightstand in between. Honestly, I don't know how people can get a good rest in a place like that. I tried the beds. They weren't very comfortable. Besides, I hate motel rooms because of the things that people do in there. I waited in the bathroom in the dark for her to show up. She ended up being much later than I expected. It was some time after 11:30 when I heard the car pull up. With the phone. I could see she wasn't dead, but she wasn't moving either. Funny thing was, she didn't scream or call for help. She just fought back. Now, that should have told me something right then, but actually, I didn't have time to think about it.
Let's see who you are.
You can imagine what was in my mind when I found out who she was. You could say I failed. After all, she got away, but then so did I. Didn't I? Yes, I'm sure there will be plenty more opportunities to. What's that?
Holly, hold it right there. Don't move. Pull it up. Down on the floor. Down on the floor on your stomach. Lie down. Now don't move at all. Don't move. Get him handcuffed.
Okay.
Tell him outside. We got him. Okay, we got him.
Somebody read him his rights. I gotta see what's on his tape.
You're under arrest for the murder of Lynette O'Donnell and Doreen Beckman. You have the right to remain silent. If you give up this right, anything you say will be taken down and used in evidence against you. If you understand this right, signify by answering yes.
Yes.
You have the right to an attorney. If you cannot afford an attorney, one will be appointed for you.
I guess that's enough of that. I'm sorry you couldn't have been there for the arrest, but at least we got it all on tape. Is it too much to listen to? Oh, boy, I'm stupid. I knew I shouldn't have let you talk me into playing for you so soon.
No, it's all right. But I don't think I'll need to hear it again for a while.
How are you feeling?
Sore. and stupid. I should have heard him coming. If I hadn't been so busy daydreaming, I wouldn't have been so careless. It's such a funny feeling to hear yourself come so close to being murdered.
I'm sure I can't imagine what that must feel like. I can tell you how I felt, though. Rewinding the tape to find out who his latest victim was, and then to hear your voice. I thought for sure you were dead. Otherwise, how... Look, I better go. You should be resting.
No, don't go, please. I'm just crying. It's all right. By the way, my answer is yes.
Yes? To what?
I heard you talking to the doctor down the hall. About my staying on the Cape for a few weeks to recuperate.
You are so impossible.
No, really. I'm glad you suggested it. Not only is it a wonderful idea, but it's the nicest thing I've overheard all day.
You have been listening to Cape Cod Radio Mystery Theater's presentation of Playback, a suspense thriller. Tonight's program was produced, written, and directed by Stephen Tomasoni. Engineering by John Todd. Sound effects by Scott Dickey, with original music and special sound processing by Mark Birmingham. The actors in tonight's play, Kevin Grappi played the psychopath. Neil McGarry was Lieutenant Peter Warrington. Sherry Scudder was Agent Mikkel Hillman. Ray Brown was John Mansfield. Jeff Spencer was the police chief. Debbie Oney was Mrs. O'Donnell. Lainey Davis played Doreen Beckman. Bill Dame was the police officer. Other voices, Cynthia Blackett, Herb Lorenzen, and Martha Watson Lorenzen. Tonight's program was recorded at HT Recording Studio, Cape Cod, and at Rosemead Productions, California. This program is copyrighted by Stephen Tomasoni for Cape Cod Radio Mystery Theater. All rights, including rights for broadcast and reproduction, are reserved. This is Floyd Pratt wishing you a pleasant evening and inviting you to tune in again when the fog rolls in on another chapter of Cape Cod Radio Mystery Theater.